This is the politicalbetting.com Polling Matters podcast. My name is Kieran Pedley. We're slightly later this week than normal. Very busy at the back end of last week, struggling to get the audio of the podcast sort of uploaded. But here we are. And I thought, before I pressed play today, I was having a think about, you know, what this podcast might include. And I think later in the show, we've got some highlights from the sort of Tip TV politics show, which some of you will have watched, which is kind of a YouTube clip of us in the TV studio discussing the latest issues of the day. And you know, some of this podcast will include material from that conversation, which included Alistair Meeks discussing his thoughts on George Osborne's future prospects ahead of the budget, and whether, you know, he would what chances he has to become the future Tory leader and obviously therefore Prime Minister. Alistair's thoughts very interesting on that subject, somewhat of a Osborne sceptic, I think. And later on in this podcast, I'll be playing the audio from a conversation that we had with myself, Alistair and Mike Smithson, looking at that. We also spoke to Matthew Shaddick, otherwise known as Shadzy, from Ladbrokes Politics, on a number of betting-related sort of subjects, including, again, the next Tory leader, as we discussed with Alistair, but also US politics and Brexit. And I wanted to start today with a bit of an update on US politics, because since we sort of press record, if you like, midweek on the TV show, there have been some developments in events across the pond. I think there's a certain extent to which events have taken a more unpleasant turn, if that was even possible, when you consider what's been going on in this campaign. Obviously, Donald Trump's rally in Chicago was cancelled due to security fears, and I'm sure people have all seen the pictures of the fights that were going on between anti-Trump protesters and sort of pro-Trump supporters at the rally. It certainly was a sort of unsettling thing to watch, and you imagine there's going to be more of this to come in the future, particularly as the protesters have seen their actions sort of be successful. And one of the things you wonder about is, you know, will this have a positive or negative impact on Trump? And you would have thought that his supporters will feel even more strongly about their support for him as a consequence of him seeing to be, you know, I guess in their impression, sort of unfairly treated. But we are looking ahead to sort of March 15th. Now, March 15th is a important day because we start to move into those winner-takes-all states, and we've got some big ones as well to keep an eye on. Now, Florida and Ohio are the two that people continually mention. Florida has 99 delegates. Ohio has 66. But actually, you've got Illinois here with 69, Missouri with 52, North Carolina with 72. So, you know, a series of winner-takes-all states that are important, and maybe we shouldn't be solely focusing on Florida and Ohio, even though I think politically those are going to be important, because John Kasich looks strong in Ohio. If he wins there, that will be a big deal. In Florida, on the other hand, Marco Rubio seems to be really struggling to win his home state versus Donald Trump, and you would imagine if he doesn't, then that's it for Rubio. But I guess if you look at the totality of those states, Florida, Illinois, Missouri, North Carolina, Ohio, the polls are currently suggesting to various degrees that Donald Trump will win all of them apart from Ohio. Now, essentially, we need sort of some polling misses like we saw on the Democrat side in Michigan for that not to be the case. Ted Cruz is relatively close to Trump in Missouri. He's within sort of 7 or 8 points. But everywhere else, Donald Trump is convincingly ahead, and it would be very surprising if he didn't win. And that's important because, as I say, these states become winner-takes-all, lots of delegates up for grabs. And if Trump does win sort of 4 out of 5 of those states, it's going to be difficult to catch him, even though there's some you know, some debate about what that would mean in terms of delegates. The in terms of the current delegate count, we'll come onto that in a sec, but there were a couple of results last night in D.C., District of Columbia. We saw Marco Rubio actually won, in inverted commas, that caucus. He gets 10 delegates. John Kasich came second and got 9, and then Donald Trump didn't win any, and Ted Cruz didn't win any. I suppose if you were being unfair, you would say the two establishment candidates winning in D.C. probably not a something that Trump and Cruz would be particularly worried about, especially considering the amount of delegates up for grabs there. In Wyoming, Ted Cruz won with 66% of the votes, but then he got 9 delegates as a result, with Rubio and Trump getting 1 each. So a couple of results coming in there last night, but I mean, when we're talking about sort of 9 delegates here, 10 delegates there, in comparison to what's coming on Tuesday, where Florida gets 99, and you can understand why perhaps the results from last night won't make a huge sort of impact on the race. And if we look at the delegates, current delegate counts, according to Associated Press, Donald Trump on 460, Cruz on 370, Rubio on 163. And again, I suppose if you take that at face value, you know, Ted Cruz is only 90 behind Donald Trump. But the problem is, if you look at March 15th, there's no evidence that Cruz will win any of those states, but certainly it looks like Donald Trump will be the big winner there, and it will become quite hard for Cruz to catch him. If Cruz was competitive, for example, in Florida, you know, you could be seeing a very different contest, but ultimately he doesn't look like he is. Now, if Rubio drops out, then perhaps Cruz can get a clear shot at Donald Trump. Not clear what Kasich would do, but that's reasonable to expect if Florida goes Trump's way. But even so, it's quite hard to see Cruz overturning Trump when you consider that places like New York are to come, although there is some ambiguity over, or lack of clarity, if you like, over which way California might go later in the contest. So a very interesting race. Trump looks in the box seat unless something dramatically turns against him. There is a huge amount of debate about whether he can be stopped. I'm very much sceptical that he can be. I think something fundamental has to happen in the race. You know, I think if Trump goes into the, you know, if he fails to get 12-3-7, the number of delegates required to win a majority, yes, technically that means he could be stopped because delegates are only bound on the first ballot. But I think that people are underestimating the political ramifications of Trump going in with the most states, the most votes, the most delegates, and then what's going to happen? What the establishment's going to give it to Kasich or Rubio or someone that didn't even stand, like Romney or Ryan? I mean, you can probably detect the cynicism in my voice, but it's very West Wing, it's very exciting and speculative, but I would have thought it's much more likely that Donald Trump bites the bullet and offers the VP slot to Ted Cruz. And then if you look at it in that context, then they currently between them have, 830 delegates between them. That would be easy. Now, I guess it's a whole other conversation as to whether Ted Cruz would agree to such a deal. That surely is no less fanciful than the idea of somebody like John Kasich getting the nomination, even though he's barely won any states. He possibly wins Ohio and maybe a couple of others, and somehow that's the Republican base is going to wear that when the overwhelming majority of their votes and delegates have gone to Cruz and to Trump. I just don't think it's living in the real world. But we'll see. It's an unprecedented time, so maybe, but certainly to me, Donald Trump looks good. Yeah, he'll either come through and win the nomination himself anyway. Now it's winner takes all. He'll sweep the board, or I reckon he'll do a deal with Cruz. But let's see what happens. Now, moving on to events closer to home, one of the conversations that we had earlier this week was looking ahead to the budget. Obviously an important budget in the context of the sort of EU referendum and declining economic confidence for the Chancellor, George Osborne. And we were joined in the TV studios this week by Alistair Meeks, who is a sort of pensions expert and regular contributor to politicalbetting.com. He recently had a series of articles around sort of planned pensions matters that Osborne was planning for the budget, which he's had to row back on. And he's something of a sort of Osborne sceptic and thinks, you know, Osborne's going to really struggle to be the next Tory leader. And the conversation you're about to hear is one that's led by Mike Smithson of politicalbetting.com, with myself and Alistair discussing the upcoming budget and the political implications for George Osborne.
He has a number of challenges. Chancellor of the Exchequer is a tough job, and it has been a tough period the last few years. He has had a deficit to close. There are limited numbers of ways in which one can do that. There are spending cuts. There are tax rises. Neither of those things are popular. he had alighted on the idea of looking at pensions taxation as a way of achieving this. Without going into the minute details, it's enough to know there are billions and billions of pounds at stake in pension scheme tax reliefs. Pensions is a subject that the general public generally tune out for, and George Osborne had hoped to swipe some of those billions without people noticing. Now, he has a reputation as a master strategist. On this occasion, I think he has tripped up really quite badly by trailing this well in advance. He announced in the summer he was going to look at how pension scheme taxation could be undertaken in the future. He gave broad hints about what he was looking at. He did so again in the autumn statement, and giving months to people like me to look at this and think, well, what's he up to? Once it's spotted that he's going for billions and billions of pounds, the tax reliefs for pensions come largely from the Conservative bedrock support. The Conservative MP has got queasy, and George Osborne found himself with a second numbers problem to go with the first numbers problem of the deficit, that he didn't have enough support in the House of Commons for the sort of budget he was looking to get through, and certainly not at a time that's so tense in the run-up to the referendum. So George Osborne finds himself in really quite a tight corner. It's going to be a difficult budget. He does continue to have a deficit to close. There's plenty of polling evidence to show that the public feel that there's been quite enough in the way of cuts and don't particularly want more in the way of tax rises, and yet he still has this deficit. So next week is really going to be quite a hard budget for him to pull off, all at a time when the public is not feeling particularly economically confident.
And, of course, after his first budget, when he made announced the pension things last July...
Yeah.
He was right racing ahead. I think he was a 50-50 chance.
Yeah.
I think he was at top of the Conservative home poll in terms of their regular surveys. You can talk on that.
I mean, I've been looking at some of the polling, and I must say, full disclosure, I got George Osborne at 8-1 with 50 quid to be the next Conservative leader the day after the general election. So maybe I'm biased. You know, viewers can decide whether to take what I say with a pinch of salt or not. I think I agree with Alistair, there's lots of reasons why we should be sceptical about George Osborne's chances of succeeding the Prime Minister. There's this Conservative home poll yesterday, which we've seen. Now, I have a bit of a bone to pick with it because it lists several candidates, and we know that there will be two that go to the membership. But the message is very clear, and it's echoed by recent YouGov polling too. Boris Johnson is head and shoulders above everybody else, and George Osborne is lagging behind. And that's really all we need to know for the time being. And added to this, economic confidence, which is something that Ipsos Mori have measured over a huge, very long period of time, is declining. I mean, you could say that for the Conservative Party, it peaked at the right time. They managed to win the election last May based on sort of economic competence and so on. But it is declining. And we know that from the polling conducted by Ipsos Mori as well, that George Osborne's fate with the public is almost linked to economic confidence too, as you might expect with the Chancellor of the Exchequer. More members of the public are dissatisfied than satisfied with what George Osborne is doing in the Treasury at the moment. So when you take all of this in its totality and the sort of disgruntled nature of the Tory backbenchers over Europe, there's lots of reasons to think George Osborne faces some problems. However, there are some caveats that we should have. I mean, one of the things that Alistair mentioned on his in his piece is that Remain needs to win big for George Osborne to have any chance. There's every possibility that Remain will win big because, the phone polls are showing that. And we know that the public consider Brexit riskier than Remain. So there's every possibility that that will happen. Furthermore, if that does happen, if they say a week's a long time in politics, well, a couple of years is even longer. And we know that David Cameron ideally would probably stand down in 2019, maybe a bit earlier in reality. So come that moment, it's entirely possible that George Osborne will find himself in a much better position than he does now.
Alistair, I know that you've got some interesting thoughts on where your money will be going on the next Tory leader.
My starting point, and I quite agree that there are lots of ifs, buts and maybes, and there may yet be a big Remain win. Certainly, Remain have started very fast out of the blocks, whilst Leave to date have yet even to coalesce around a single campaign, which is, I think, going to prove really quite an impediment. I mean, we're looking now at the middle of April at the earliest before we have an official Leave campaign. And none of the Leave figures have quite the star quality that David Cameron has. That much is apparent. But if it's not a big Remain win, then it does seem to me that George Osborne specifically is poorly placed. If Leave win, I can't see how he gets it. He's too tied to David Cameron, too tied to Remain. If it's a narrow Remain win, well, then a majority of Conservative supporters will have voted for Leave almost certainly. It's hard to see how a coalition that gets to a narrow Remain win would have a Leave camp that that didn't have a majority of Conservative supporters. Those Leave supporters generally are more enthused, very passionate about their cause in a way that Remain supporters in general and Conservative Remain supporters in particular just don't seem to feel. If you the few very energised Remain supporters seem to be primarily Lib Dems and perhaps some in the right-hand side of the Labour Party. So you would have a Conservative Party that has been riven on the question. It's already apparent that there is a fault line that both sides are jumping up and down on pretty hard. At the end of the process, end of June, the Conservative Party is going to have to find a way to get back together. Are they going to gather back together behind George Osborne, who is so closely tied to the Prime Minister, who is so aggressively going after the Leave campaign? I find that quite hard. In those circumstances, who might the Conservatives go for? Well, Boris Johnson is the obvious name, but it has to be said, first, he's already, before the referendum, had a reputation for being a maverick, for being someone not particularly reliable. And the referendum campaign, whilst he's placed himself strategically very, you know, effectively at the head of that, he's not looked convincing. He didn't look convincing when he gave his opening explanation as to why he was going for Leave. He didn't look convincing the other day on the Andrew Marr show. He's going to have to do better. And if there's one thing Boris Johnson really needs to establish, it's that he's not just an affable, likeable persona. It's that he's a heavyweight who can take on some hard arguments. And I would be looking more at a prominent Leaver who the Conservative Remain camp feel that they can do business with, who they can gather around. Now, in my article the other day, I suggested Michael Gove. In the event of a narrow Remain win, there's likely to be some time. It's unlikely David Cameron would step down immediately unless he were absolutely forced to. And if he can go long, that gives time for passions to cool. It gives time for people to look forward. If one looks back at all the previous Conservative leadership changes since Margaret Thatcher, then with the possible exception of Michael Howard, the next leader was someone who 2 years out no one had been thinking about at all. So it is quite possible, if we're looking a couple of years hence, just as you were saying, Kieran, there might be someone new come into the frame.
Does that happen in government, though? I'm curious about this, because there's differences when you're in opposition and you can choose almost whoever you want, whereas when you're in government, does that government experience...
Well, it happened in 1990.
Yeah, John Major, who was chosen, I guess, as much for who he wasn't as for who he was. And I would again be looking for someone who might be chosen for who they weren't rather than for who they were. One often hears the stuff about he who wields the dagger rarely gets the crown. Well, I think the people who are seen as embodying particular factions are going to have similar problems that people on the other side are going to find them unpalatable.
I mean, one thing I'm curious about is, you know, this question of electability. One of the things we see with party bases at the moment is that, you know, they don't tend to care too much about what the public thinks more generally. We've seen it with the Labour at the moment. I wonder whether the fact that Boris is the most popular politician in the country is going to resonate at all with the membership.
I think the Conservatives are feeling supremely confident at the moment. They're looking at the Labour Party right now and figuring that they could put up absolutely anyone they chose and romp to a general election victory next time. Whether that's right, I'm much more sceptical, but that's what the Conservative Party feel. They're going to choose someone who makes them feel good. I don't see them being particularly focused on who makes the public feel good.
Right, before we wind up this section, you've very good at producing interesting bets on political betting. Could you think of any other bets that you would like to recommend?
No. Well, when I look at the next Labour leader market, which is such an active market, astonishingly, given that what are we 6 months on from the last Labour leadership, it does seem to me that there is huge scope there for laying, going on Betfair and laying various different candidates. I find it very hard to see how a candidate from the right of the Labour Party can get there next time. The support base within the Labour Party seems very firmly lined up behind Jeremy Corbyn. Even if Jeremy Corbyn were not there, it appears that other figures from the left are likely to predominate first. I would be looking on Betfair myself and be looking at the various prominent Labour right-wingers and laying them, not because they're no doubt, they are no doubt excellent people, but they just don't...
Hilary Benn, Dan Jarvis.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly, those sorts of figures. They may be very popular outside the Labour Party membership, but within the Labour Party membership they are not on the right side of the political fault
line. Tom Watson might be somebody to watch quite closely.
I would not bet against Tom Watson.
Yeah, I wouldn't do anything against Tom. Anyway, thank you very much.
Mike Smithson and Alistair Meeks there discussing, of course, George Osborne's upcoming budget and potential future sort of political career. Certainly, I think one of my sort of points that I was making there was that we shouldn't underestimate George Osborne, given that he still has a lot of sway in the party. He's still the Chancellor of the Exchequer. He's still very much likely to make any leadership ballot that may happen, along with one other. And, you know, we shouldn't necessarily underestimate him, particularly if Remain does win big and if the economy looks better at the time when David Cameron eventually stands down. But Alistair certainly makes some very good points about, you know, David Cameron may be looking a little bit vulnerable, a little bit uncertain, depending on what happens with the EU referendum. Obviously, the EU being a huge political issue for the Conservative Party, not just now, but has been for some time. So very uncertain times for that party, and George Osborne may be the one that sort of carries the can if the party does revolt against David Cameron and George Osborne. I did write on Political Betting earlier this year that this could be the year that David Cameron loses the Conservative Party sort of over the EU referendum and such like. So it will be interesting to see what happens. And we did talk a little bit there also about the Labour Party. There was an interesting story in the Sunday Times this morning talking about Labour moderates planning to launch a coup against Jeremy Corbyn, sort of in the sweet spot, as they call it, after the sort of EU referendum, but before conference, where they want to move before the Corbyn sort of clique within the PLP can change the leadership rules to ensure that Jeremy Corbyn can get on the ballot. But even if he can get on the ballot, and you assume that he would as the current leader in any leadership contest, there is a sense that, you know, there are people within the PLP that feel they have to act soon. I'm pretty sceptical. I think that you know, we often hear this about Labour plots, but they never seem to come to fruition. We know that Jeremy Corbyn is very popular amongst the Labour membership. That may take a bit of a hit if Labour does badly in May. I'm not sure it will take a sufficient hit for him to be defeated. And again, much like Donald Trump in the US, you know, it's not so much, in my opinion, that he cannot possibly be defeated, but the case is, who's going to do it? And I think that the only person you can reasonably see to take him on is probably Tom Watson. You know, Dan Jarvis is a candidate that I would personally appeal to me. You know, I think, you know, his leadership, sort of obvious leadership abilities from being a sort of military leader in places like Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, would make him someone that the Tories would really struggle to attack for being weak or to being a sort of inadequate leader. I think he's someone that would, you know, appeal to the public. But at the end of the day, the nature of the Labour Party membership at the moment, I think they'd be more likely to consider him a war criminal than they would be to actually vote for him. But maybe I'm being unkind. But we'll certainly follow that. But as with any leadership contest or leadership rumours in the Labour Party, I guess we'll sort of believe it when we see it. The final segment of today's show is also sort of looking back at the Tip TV politics show this week, where we were joined by Matthew Shadyk of Ladbrokes, who will be familiar to a lot of people who sort of follow this podcast. He's been on this podcast before. And also people that sort of read politicalbetting.com, I'm sure will be aware of him too. Ladbrokes politics certainly has lots of great markets, both on the sort of UK and US politics, but also sort of elsewhere. I think they've got a number of markets to do with Ireland at the moment, given their sort of political situation, which we haven't, to be honest, really covered too much on this podcast. But we covered a range of issues with Shadzi, including George Osborne's future and who the next Tory leader might be, the EU referendum, which is certainly dominating, I think, a lot of the bets that he's seeing, and also the US political race, which is obviously fascinating, and, you know, he's got a number of different markets there. So the sort of final conversation on this podcast will be me, Matthew Shadyk, and Mike Smithson discussing some of the odds on a variety of topics, hopefully bringing together everything we've discussed on this podcast so far. And here is that conversation. Welcome to the final part of our show this week. We'll be discussing some of the betting odds. I'm joined today by Mike Smithson, as usual, but also by Matthew Shadyk, head of political betting at Ladbrokes. Matt, welcome.
Hi, Kieran.
So, budget week next week, Matt. Normally, I would assume then that the bookies are going to be taking loads of odds, loads of bets on what's happening next week. But I've got a feeling you're going to tell me that's not where the money's going.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about everybody else, but I'm finding it hard to get too excited about this budget. There's just so much more going on. We've got the referendum, especially. We've got the day before the budget. We've got Florida and Ohio in America, and that's looming much larger. We're taking way more money on that sort of thing than we are going to take on what colour George Osborne's tie is going to be next Wednesday.
And, you know, where are you most vulnerable, if you think about with the US election? I mean, Donald Trump becomes president, are you sort of selling your house?
Yeah, I mean, it's all about Trump and to a lesser extent, Bernie Sanders as well. I mean, Donald Trump was 100-1 when we first quoted him back in last summer when he declared. Bernie Sanders was 500-1 two or three years ago when we first priced him up. So we're sitting on some very, very nasty liabilities. Some of our customers are sitting on some potentially huge returns if Trump or indeed Sanders becomes president. I haven't completely given up hope that the Republicans might be able to stop him, but we'll certainly find out a lot more next Wednesday.
We'll come back to America later in this segment, but yep. Looking at events closer to home, I was looking through your odds earlier today, and you know, one of the products you've got is this betting barometer. Do you want to explain a little bit about that?
Yeah, so it's an attempt to try and explain what the betting's telling us about the referendum outcome, perhaps to people who aren't quite so familiar with odds. So we've got the odds down the bottom there, you can see at the moment. Remain at 1-3, leave at 9-4. But we've translated those into a probability of the site. So you can see our little barometer dial there pointing towards 71% chance is what our odds are implying is the probability of the UK voting to stay in the EU in June.
Hold that thought. So, I mean, Mike, 71% chance of Remain. Do you think that's a good estimate of the chances?
Based on what we know at the moment, probably yes. But it's not the sort of bet I will put on because the odds are too tight. But at the moment, that's what it is. But I think there's a long way to go in this referendum campaign. And I think that once the official Leave campaign is designated, I think you're going to see a very much more sort of professional, organised and focused effort. So I'm not 71%. I wouldn't bet on it.
And as an expert better, Mike, I mean, you know, one of the things that I always sort of think, being more of a novice, these sorts of referendums must be a good opportunity for punters because ultimately we don't quite know what turnout is going to be. It's a very unpredictable race. There's not really much that we can look back on. Well, certainly not very many referenda we can look back on as examples of where things might go. So potentially you've got a good chance of taking people like Matt to the cleaners, do you think?
Nobody's ever going to take Matt to the cleaners.
Well, actually, the point I was going to make, there's quite an interesting pattern here which was replicated in Scotland 2 years ago. Actually, most of the bets we're taking are for Leave. That's the majority of the bets we're taking. But most of the money we're taking is from Remain. So fewer bets, but much bigger ones on the Remain side. And that's what's driving the price. If you were just going by the volume of people betting on each side, then this would be a lot closer.
Mm. I mean, earlier on in the show, we talked with Alistair Meeks, an excellent discussion about the sort of Conservative Party leadership and where that might be going. And I know that's something that you've got odds on as well. I mean, let's take a look at the Tory party leadership and where the odds are for that. So Boris Johnson, very much the favourite. But, I mean, Mike, I'll bring you in here. I mean, which of these odds stand out for you?
I quite like Michael Gove. I think that Gove is a sort of pure person in terms of his own his own sort of commitment within the party. His statement when he joined the Leave campaign was highly regarded and very principled. And I think he could be just the sort of person. Osborne, as we talked about, not that great. And I've got great question marks over Boris. I just think Boris doesn't sound prime ministerial.
Mm. I suppose the value bet in these things, given that there's going to be two candidates, is trying to sort of look two steps ahead at who those two candidates might be. For example, if George Osborne decided he wasn't going to run and maybe, dare I say, embarrass himself by losing heavily, maybe someone like Sajid Javid, who is allegedly his protege, comes through. And you know, that 12-1 here is quite a good bet for people. Where do you see the money going for Boris at the moment, presumably, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, the minute he declared for Leave, he jumped into favour. Osborne's been favour for years and years to be the next Tory leader. But the minute Boris declared for Leave, he shot into the front of the market. And we've taken a fair bit of money on him. I kind of agree with your sentiment. It's probably worth looking elsewhere. I mean, if we look at past leadership contests, not just for the Tories, but for Labour recently as well, it's tended to be a sort of slightly fresher, newer face who's won these contests. If you think about Cameron himself was a fairly big prize a year or so out from becoming leader. Ian Duncan-Smith, Michael Howard, these were all pretty big prizes. And even Labour, I mean, obviously Jeremy Corbyn was so far off the radar it was incredible, but Ed Miliband hadn't been particularly well fancied until quite late on in that process. So I think looking a little bit further down the list, I mean, the one we've taken a bit of money on recently has been Jacob Rees-Mogg, in from 100-1 to 33-1 over the last couple of weeks.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say Jacob Rees-Mogg will not be the next Prime Minister of the UK. But we'll see. I mean, we started at the beginning of this segment talking about America, so let's look at some of the bets that you've been taking across the pond. Now, I was looking through the odds, and there's so much to bet on the US, on your site, which is great. Not just the who's going to win, Donald Trump with the Republican nomination, Hillary Clinton favourite for the Democrat nomination, but also all the individual state races. And we talked about Florida and Ohio being the sort of upcoming ones of interest. But this was one that I was interested in, which looks at not just who's going to win, but who beats who, which I thought was interesting. Tell me a bit about this chart.
Yeah, so we've got a market here which gives, if you want to have a bet with Labricks, it gives you a chance of predicting the actual result in November if you've got an opinion on which of the potential nominees is likely to beat the other one. So you'll see at the top there, most people now are assuming it's going to be Clinton and Trump in the general election. But the odds here are suggesting that Trump would have something around a 30% chance of beating Clinton if it turns into that contest. Now, you'd think that maybe Republican voters would have a think about those kind of prices and wonder whether really he's the right person to nominate. Because if you look a bit further down the list, we've got Kasich there. Now, our odds suggest there's pretty much a 50% chance that he would beat Clinton if he was in the general election. So I think from that point of view, if you've got a strong opinion on which of the GOP candidates have got a good chance, then there might be some value there.
Mm. I mean, Mike, I want to bring you back in here. 30% chance of Trump beating Clinton. I wonder if that might be a little bit low.
I think that's probably about right. I think if Trump gets the nomination, I think we're understating him. I think that he is reaching an audience. He's reaching the sort of white working class, which has perhaps never really been mobilised. Remember how Reagan got what were known as the Reagan Democrats. Mm. And I can see that Trump mobilising that vote. And they're extraordinarily sort of vocal and energetic and everything. And now I think Clinton is damaged. You know, there's no doubt that what she's gone through.
Michigan yesterday, of course, suggesting as much.
Well, that was absolutely knocked everybody out at Michigan. I think, well, I don't know what odds were being quoted on that, but the polls had it, I think, were winning by 26%. As it's turned out, she trailed by a few percent at the end of the day. Quite startling.
I mean, when I was looking at these odds earlier, it's very difficult to find a sort of killer bet really there. I mean, ultimately, it does look like a Clinton versus Trump race. I suppose Clinton beating Cruz is interesting because I suppose there is an argument that for Cruz getting to the nomination via purely the fact that he is the closest person to Trump at the moment. And maybe if Rubio does badly in Florida and drops out, perhaps that creates a bit of momentum for Cruz. But I guess the whole problem with this Republican race throughout has been there hasn't been this one anti-Trump candidate. It's not so much that Trump isn't stoppable. I think he very much is. But it's just who is that person that's going to stop him?
Yeah, I mean, it's panned out perfectly for Trump, really, hasn't it? I mean, he's not that popular. I mean, he's obviously more popular than the others right now, but he's getting a very steady 30-odd percent of the vote in pretty much every state. But you're right. I mean, nobody's managed to coalesce around another individual. Cruz looks like he's in the driving seat as far as that role goes, but then he's not that popular either, right? The Republican Party don't like Cruz very much either, so it is starting to look, I wouldn't say inevitable, but very difficult for Trump to get beaten.
Are you
here.
Seeing any money on Paul Ryan, who's the Speaker? I got a bet on it 150-1 after listening to one of Kieran's podcasts.
Yeah, I've backed him myself as well. I mean, we have seen some money for Paul Ryan and indeed for Mitt Romney as being two potential alternatives if we get to a brokered convention.
What sort of odds are they on at the moment?
Yeah, so we've got a price on whether any of the candidates will make 50% of the available delegates in the primary process. Slightly odds against. We're saying 11-10 that nobody gets it. So we think it's slightly more unlikely than likely we'll get a brokered convention, but it's very, very plausible. And if that happens, well, we don't have much history to base that on, right? I mean, it hasn't happened for several decades. The party will decide the rules of how that works. They're not particularly well disposed towards Trump or indeed Cruz. So that does insert a bit more uncertainty into the situation.
It's interesting, you and I were talking on social media recently, I believe, about, you know, the prospect of a third party candidate, and maybe if Trump perceives himself to have been slighted by the establishment, maybe they coalesce together to put a Romney or a Ryan on the ticket in a brokered convention. Maybe he takes his ball, runs away and runs as a third party candidate. I believe 8-1, is that still the case?
8-1 shot, Trump to run as a third party. I don't think it's very likely myself. Obviously, the most likely thing is he'll be the nominee.
Absolutely, yeah.
Would he finance it? Obviously, he could afford to finance a third-party campaign, but actually, logistically, it's quite difficult. And it's really quite hard to see how he'd do anything other than hand the election to Clinton or Sanders, I guess.
Matthew Shadick and Mike Smithson there taking us through a number of the sort of political betting odds out there at the moment. Certainly lots going on. A big thank you to Matthew and to Mike for joining me in that segment. I suppose a lot of the topics covered there we've already covered, I've already given my view on in this podcast, but one of the things that we haven't discussed, which Mike sort of talked about, was Hillary Clinton in the US. Now, we were talking about Michigan there, obviously, and, you know, Bernie Sanders coming through there and doing well in Michigan will be something that worries the Clinton campaign, I think, as the electoral calendar becomes slightly more Bernie-friendly. I mean, essentially, pretty much all of the southern states have now voted. So Hillary Clinton's lead, strong lead with minority voters, but particularly African-Americans, is going to become a little bit less relevant, well, a lot less relevant as the calendar develops. Having said that, she does look pretty strong in Florida, which obviously is the biggest southern state of them all. And Ohio, she certainly looks good. There is an argument that says if Michigan was wrong, maybe Ohio will be wrong too. So that will certainly be one to watch out on the Democrat side this week. But also one of the things I do wonder is this: is how much the stories of Bernie Sanders supporters shutting down the Trump rally in Chicago will cut through. I mean, it's the easiest thing in the world when you're a sort of obsessive on politics like I am, and like a lot of people listening to this, I'm sure are too, to sort of place too much importance on individual events. We've always got to be mindful of that. But I just wonder if there'll be some people that look at, you know, the fact that it was Sanders supporters that shut down that rally, and, you know, it might sort of, I don't know, convince them that Bernie Sanders is the true face of progressives versus, you know, Donald Trump. Who knows? Maybe not. Or maybe it will for a couple of days, but ultimately if Clinton does a Trump, if you like, and wins 4 out of 5 or all of the Tuesday, March 15th states, then maybe she'll be okay. There's lots of debate about her candidacy. I mean, Mike alluded to there that, you know, she's not particularly popular, or she is a kind of flawed candidate in his eyes. And I think there is evidence for that. Her favourability ratings are pretty poor, and she has issues with trustworthiness. But there was a Wall Street Journal, I believe, poll out this week which showed that she would lead Donald Trump by 13 points in a hypothetical general election race. Now, we have to be a little bit careful with these at this stage. You know, we're a long way away from any general election. And much like the general election here, to truly understand the race, it's not really relevant to look at the sort of horse race nationally. You have to look at the state-by-state races. Now, having said that, if a 13-point national sort of popular vote win for Clinton was accurate, then there's really no way you can cut those numbers at a state-by-state level that is anything other than a landslide Clinton victory. But I guess we've just got to be careful, because ultimately it will be the Ohio's, the Florida's, maybe the Virginia's, the Colorado's, places like there, those which will decide this race. And I suppose state-by-state polling in those states will be more important than a national vote share. But certainly something to keep an eye out for as you know, we get closer to a Clinton versus Trump race, you know, and attention start focusing on the general issues amongst turnout will be very important, particularly amongst the minority voters that Clinton leads so strongly with, but also the Republicans feel that they need to be better among, and you would imagine Trump will struggle. But on the flip side, you know, white working class votes, Reagan Democrats, these sorts of people, you know, will they turn out for Trump in big numbers? You know, is there an argument that says white working class Democrats will go for Trump? Now, these are sweeping generalisations we're making here, but I think there's certainly trends we need to be looking at. You know, what's the white working class vote doing? What are the minority votes doing? What's turnout going to be? But I think that the one thing we've not discussed, and is rarely discussed in the general election shake-up, is the role of the current president, President Obama. His approval rating has started to move into positive numbers. If that continues, don't underestimate the importance of him passing the torch, as he surely will do, to Hillary Clinton at the Democrat convention, with all his oratory that he's so famous for. And I think if Americans look back, faced with a Clinton versus Trump race, and if they look back and think, actually, President Obama wasn't so bad after all, and, you know, he starts to get friendlier press, then, you know, his role of in the election, and essentially the prospect of having a third Obama term, though it might make certain people irate and angry, you know, will independents, but also the Obama coalition that put him there in the first place, will they turn out for Hillary in November? Certainly something to keep an eye out for. But anyway, that's all we've got time for this week's podcast. A big thanks to Matthew Shaddick, Alistair Meeks and Mike Smithson for joining me on the Tip TV politics show sort of earlier this week. Do check out the YouTube. You know, it's certainly worth watching. We always sort of appreciate people's feedback. This coming week, it's going to be us back in the TV studio again, this time with The Telegraph's Asa Bennett, who will be talking through the implications of the budget. We're pressing sort of record on Wednesday after that. We'll be more interested, to be honest, in the sort of political ramifications of the budget rather than specific measures in it. You know, how does Osborne do? How does Jeremy Corbyn do, sort of responding to it? That's certainly going to be an important sort of starting gun as we head into sort of the long campaign for May, but also the EU referendum campaign, as the EU referendum campaign gathers pace. We'll also be looking back at Tuesday, you know, as we've mentioned. I think that a slightly surreal aspect of sort of British politics watches at the moment will be, I suspect, that people will be just as interested in what's going on the States on March 15th, so on Tuesday, as they are on the budget on Wednesday. But we'll be bringing all that together in a special show Wednesday evening. That should be out on Thursday, so do keep an eye out for that. But in the meantime, do subscribe to us on iTunes if you have iTunes. Do like a Facebook page, and do leave us a comment or a rating on iTunes or elsewhere, or Podbean, wherever you sort of listen to the podcast. It really helps get the podcast out there and grow our audience, so very much appreciative of the people that have sent the nice comments in so far. Otherwise, you know, share on social media, tell the people about the show. You know, we don't get anything financially out of this, it's all for the love of it, and you know, you helping to spread the word very much sort of helps us out. The music you're about to hear is Pollinate by Kirk Pearson, licensed under a Creative Commons. Thanks for listening.